ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 Something unusual is going on here. Can you guess? You won't guess. It's midweek in an ISKCON center, and there's an evening class, and there are so many people here. If it was in India, it wouldn't be surprising, but in Europe, it is. So congratulations to all of you, especially Krishna Prema Rupa Prabhu for steadily serving and guiding everyone. There's another unusual thing. The kirtans are going on three times a day, and lively kirtans. These are all healthy signs. So usually in the evening you have a Bhagavad Gita class. I'm going to speak on Vishnu Sahasranama. I first started speaking on this a few years ago. Because everyone is expecting me to give classes on controversial social issues, and I thought if I stick to Vishnu Sahasranam, it's only glorification of Krishna. So, keeps me out of trouble. The name that I'm on now, it's one of those troublesome names. Kala Nemi Niha. Can anyone guess any idea what that name means? It's not a very common name. There are names, just like in this verse. This is verse 69. It's Kala Nemi Ha Shauri Sura Surajaneshvara Trilokatma Trilokesha Keshava Keshiha Harihi. So in this verse are two very well-known names of Krishna. One is Keshava, and another is Hari. But Kala Nemi Niha, I don't think you ever heard that name. You ever heard that name? No. Anyone else ever heard it? Kala Nemi Das? That can't be right. Well, maybe. It's possible, because names can be interpreted in various ways. Kala Nemi is the name of... Who was Kamsa in his previous life? There's a clue. Kala Nemi, a demon. He's mentioned in the 8th canto of Bhagavatam, Kala Nemi. And Niha. Any idea? You're a great student of Bhagavad Gita. Nihatya Dhata Rashtranam Ka Priti Syaj Janardana. In the first chapter we find Arjuna asking Krishna, Nihatya Dhatarashtranam, Nihatya, if we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, Ka Priti, where will be the love, where will be the fun, where will be the happiness? Syaj, how can it be? Janardana. So, Nihatya, it means killing. So I said it was a troublesome name. It's one of those nasty names for the demons. The devotees like them. Means the killer. The obvious meaning is the killer of Kala Nemi, who is a great demon. As usual, the acharyas have come. Oh, by the way, I said you usually have a Bhagavad Gita class. This Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he commented in one point in his copious writings that there are two great jewels in Mahabharata. One is Bhagavad Gita and the other is Vishnu Sahasranama. So this name, Kala Nemi, like all the names, can be interpreted by... interpreting the Sanskrit in various ways, various meanings can be understood. But most of the commentators, they don't just interpret, but they give shastric references to back up their meanings. So kala nemi, kala, you all know what kala means, right? Kala means time, time, common word, very common word. In Bhagavad Gita, kalosmi, Krishna says, I am time. And it's a common word in Indian languages up to the present day, although it's not used so much, but it's used in a philosophical sense, and not so much in a day-to-day usage. Philosophical, or just like in South India, in Tamil, I say Rahu Kalam, the time of inauspicious time, for instance. There are various words for time. Samai, Kala, Vela, these are common words. So Kala means time, and Nemi, that word you're unlikely to know. It means the outer ring of a wheel. There must be some word for that in English. There's the spokes and the hub of a wheel, and the outer rim, the rim, it's called the rim, just called the rim, that's all. Outer rim is the rim. The outer part of a wheel is called a nemi. And so he who kills, it refers to the rim of the wheel, but if the rim of the wheel is to, it means the effects of time. We are all under the effects of time. Kala sometimes means death also. Under the grip of time means under the grip of death. Means under the time is, in this material world, time is the medium in which we experience birth, death, old age, and disease. Time is the medium or the dimension in which we struggle helplessly, hopelessly for existence. So the commentators, one of the commentator here, he says that what is the factor, what is it that perpetuates that wheel or our being crushed in the wheel of time? It is ignorance. That is analyzed also in the beginning of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the nectar of devotion, that there's an analysis of sin. Because in the very beginning of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami discusses, the topic is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and he particularly wants to describe what is Shuddha Bhakti. There are various adjectives which can be placed before the noun bhakti, and particularly in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the adjectives are given sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. And from another perspective, there is raga bhakti, or raga anuga bhakti, raga atmaka bhakti, and vaidhi bhakti. But so Shuddha Bhakti, the subject of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is Shuddha Bhakti. I'm getting a little off, little into details here. So Shuddha Bhakti has six characteristics, of which the first is Klesha Agni, that which kills. Another word for killing. In Sanskrit, there are various words for killing. So we have here Nihatya, or for Kala Nemi. And so that which kills, klesha. Klesha means trouble. Adhyatmik klesh, adhibhautik klesh, adhidaivik klesh. So what is the root cause of all distress or troubles is sin. And what is the root cause of all sin is ignorance. So if we get, and what is ignorance? To not recognize our position in relationship with Krishna. So Krishna kills that ignorance. He kills that ignorance primarily by speaking Bhagavad Gita. And as Vyasadev, he gives all the Vedas, of which the Nigamakalpa Galita Phalam, Nigamakalpa Taru Galitam Phalam, the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. Veda means knowledge, and the ripened fruit is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Krishna gives the knowledge by which we get free from birth and death. Also, another commentator says that this wheel can be understood to be the crushing effects of Kali, as in Kali Yuga. And the original commentator in this Kali Yuga, Parashara Bhatta, he gives a quote from Krishna states, although Shastric reference is not available, avidya kya chayanemi kala chakrasya durdhara samayiyam samashritya vigraham vidhunoti cha. Avidya, ignorance, is the inherent bad effect of the wheel of time, kala chakra. But when it comes, when that wheel of time comes within my sphere of influence, then it loses its, it literally means it loses its form, its vigraha. So if a wheel is not round anymore, it's not a wheel anymore. Now, Shankaracharya has given an extensive commentary on the Vishnu Sahasranama, and he interprets it as Kalanemi was later born as Kamsa, and Krishna killed. He not only killed Kalanemi as Vishnu. Vishnu killed Kalanemi, but he also killed. He also killed Kamsa. And you may say, well, why are we listening to Shankaracharya's commentary? His commentary is very good, just like we listened to Bhajagovinda, which was given by him. And also Baladev Vidyabhushan, who is the Gaurya Vaishnav commentator on Vishnu Sahasranam, gives the same meaning for this name, that Krishna killed Kamsa, who is Kalanemi. And there's a quote in this regard from Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Krishna is speaking to Muchukunda about the pastimes that Krishna is recalling to Muchukunda, some of the pastimes that Krishna had performed up to that point, because Muchukunda missed it all. He was asleep. While Krishna was performing various pastimes, Muchukunda was asleep. So Krishna told him that among the things that he had done, Krishna told Muchukunda, Kalanemi hatah Kamsa. I have killed Kamsa. I've killed Kalanemi in the form of Kamsa. Then another completely different meaning given by one of the commentators, Satyadeva Vashishta. And one of the characteristics of this commentator is he always gives a completely different meaning to everyone, whatever anyone else gives, which is fine. Just he's giving, because presumably he came after the others and he wanted to dig deeper and find out some more meanings. So he gives the meaning, of ha in niha as to go. So niha means one who gives directions or makes things happen. So in this case, kalanemiha means one who keeps time rolling on. Why does time keep going on? Because Krishna, as kalanemi, niha, makes it go on. And he particularly refers to this as the sun. Because, at least for us here on the earth, we measure time primarily according to the sun, the movements of the sun, don't we? There's the day, and the day is according to the solar day. We use a solar calendar. The months are, it depends. You can use a solar calendar or a lunar calendar, and theoretically you could make all kinds of calendars based on, for instance, the movements of Venus vis-a-vis the Earth, but we mostly in the world today, the solar calendar is used, although the lunar calendar also has its usefulness. The Vedic culture uses both solar and lunar. But the sun is that which makes time go, which makes time happen. The most prominent luminary, nakshatranam aham shashi, oops, that's the moon, prabhasmi shashi surya, I'm the light of the sun and the moon. But what makes the sun go is Krishna, Brahma Sanghita, anyone? How Krishna makes the sun move? Yat chakshur esha savita sakala grahanam. Anyone? Raja samasta sura murti rashesha tejaha. Yat yagyaya brahmati sambhrita kala chakro. Govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Yat yagyaya, on the order of whom, yasyagya brahmati, moves, sambhrita, faithfully following his order. Kala chakra, the sun makes the wheel of time. So the sun, which is the eye, just like the eye of Krishna, the king of all, yasyagya is the king of all the planets, of all the demigods. So another interpretation. No, I don't think I'm going to read that one. Now, this, the main one, or the one that comes to mind, at least in my mind, most obviously, was the killing of Kalanemi. This is described in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, canto 10, text 56. Srila Prabhupada's translation is as follows. This is in the chapter about the battle between the demigods and the demons in the 8th canto of Bhagavatam. It's a very lively chapter, lots of action. Maybe you remember seeing the painting of Krishna on the back of Garuda coming down above the demigods and killing the demons. There's one of the great paintings for which actually in the art world they should have recognized that there's a whole school of devotional painting. It should have been recognized in the art world as something amazing is going on, that Westerners have taken up painting scenes and icons from Vedic culture and become very expert. And even within that, even within the devotional painting school, there are sub-schools also, just like nowadays when we see paintings of Krishna and his pastimes, anytime you say, oh, that's by a Russian, isn't it? You can recognize You can recognize, there's one Rasikananda and some others. You can recognize, and in Hungary also, there's a whole group of painters. And so that's one of the great cultural contributions that Srila Prabhupada has given to the world through his disciples and grand disciples, a few specialists. This is the translation given by Srila Prabhupada. When the demon Kalanemi, who was carried by a lion, Kalanemi was riding on the back of a lion. When the demon Kalanemi, who was carried by a lion, saw that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, carried by Garuda, was on the battlefield, the demon immediately took his trident, whirled it, and discharged it at Garuda's head. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the master of the three worlds, immediately caught the trident, and with the very same weapon, he killed the enemy, Kalanemi, along with his carrier, the lion. So there's this picture of it. It's like a photograph of the battlefield. And these paintings, they're authorized representations of what actually happened, authorized in as much as Srila Prabhupada personally directed the artwork. And Srila Prabhupada, with his transcendental vision, could say exactly what was going on. So the purport of this verse, in this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says, Kalanemyadaya sarve karina nihata api shukreno jivita santa punastenai vapatitaha. So you'll find this well. Kalanemi is in this verse, quoted by Madhvacharya. And also the word nihata. Kalanemi adaya sarve karina nihata api. So this means Kalanemi and all the other demons were killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. And when Shukracharya, their spiritual master, brought them back to life, they were again killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it was quite a scene. They were getting killed, and then Shukra would bring them back to life, and then Vishnu would again kill them. And it would go on like this. Kalanemi was killed by his own trident. That's ironic, you could say. That his great weapon that he wanted to kill Vishnu with, Vishnu caught it and threw it back and killed him and his lion. So this Kalanemi later became Kamsa. So we can just understand what a great demon he was, this Kalanemi. Because Kamsa was the leader of so many demons. So many demons were sent by Kamsa to Vrindavan to try to kill Krishna. All the demons were killed. But all these demons that Kamsa sent, they were all dreadful demons, but they were all servants of Kamsa. So we can just imagine what a powerful demon he was. Kamsa himself was feared by the demigods because they knew that he was their old adversary, Kalanemi, reborn. So that's just a short description of Kalanemi's death at the hands of Vishnu. And it often happens that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's just a summary of a pastime which is given in more detail in other shastras. What's happening? Oh, okay. This. All right. I found this in the room. It's good for show. The death of Kalanemi and the fight is given in more detail in the Harivansha Purana. So I'll read from that. There's several chapters describing this terrible battle between the demigods and the demons. And as often is described in these descriptions, it's back and forward. Sometimes the demons are very they're going forward very powerfully and pushing back the demigods. Sometimes the demigods, they rout the demons, and then the demons, they regroup and come back, and then so it goes back and forward like this. So what's happened at this point in the battle, as described in Sri Harivamsa Purana, is that Agni and Vayu had teamed up. The demigods of fire and wind. It's a very powerful combination. When fire is propelled by wind, it becomes very powerful. So they had teamed up, and heading the demigods, they had routed the demons. Now, enter Kalanemi. When the formidable demon Kalanemi heard that Agni and Vayu had attained victory, he came and stood before them. Kalanemi's head was decorated with a crown that appeared as bright as the sun. His feet were adorned with ankle bells that produced a sharp sound. He had armlets and amulets made of silver hung on his chest. He looked just like Mount Mandara. In his 100 arms he held various weapons. So he had 100 arms and weapons in all of them, which made him appear most dangerous. He also had 100 heads, making him look like a gigantic mountain with 100 peaks. So you can understand, he's no ordinary dude. He's quite a character. His appearance was so brilliant that he looked like a blazing forest fire in summer. You get forest fires here sometimes? Yes? No? No. Yeah? Just recently in California, they had terrible forest fires, out of control. Just, what can you do? Samsara dava nala. So, Kamsa was a personified Dhavanala. What's the word? It just says, actually the Sanskrit says, himanta eva pavakaha. Just says, fire at the end of the winter. Fire, he looked like fire in summer. The color of his hair was like that of smoke. Grayish, that would be, I suppose, black, gray. Although the color of his mustache was green. There you go. Long before the punks. He had a green mustache. His teeth hung down over his lips. That means his teeth came out like a real demon, teeth coming out over the lips. And this made him look unusual. His gigantic body seemed to cover the three worlds. He lifted the sky with his hands, literally says that. With his arms he lifted, bahu bis tulayan vyoma. And with his feet he kicked many hills, smashing them to pieces. By the blast of his breath he drove away the clouds. His eyes were broad and red, and he gazed with a crooked glance. He looked no less powerful than Indra, the king of the demigods. Just by seeing him, it was understood that he had come onto the battlefield with a resolution to burn the demigods to ashes. He began to challenge the demigods. Tarjayantam means to rebuke the demigods. While covering the 10 directions with his influence, He reminded people of personified death at the time of annihilation, hungrily standing there, ready to devour everyone. His hands were strongly built. His fingers were powerful. And remember, he had 100 arms. He wore bangles, and his amulet was slightly displaced. He raised his strongly built right hand. Dakshinena. Maybe right hands, and declared to the demons who are lying injured upon the ground, who are beaten by the demigods, "O heroes, stand up and fight," because so many demons were scattered on the battlefield, having been thrashed by the demigods. So he called to them, "Get up, come on, get up. Get up and fight." When the fierce demon, Kalanemi, who was as fearful as death for his enemies, entered the battlefield, the demigods became frightened simply by seeing him. Nowadays they have movies and video games with all kinds of weird creatures shown. So when you're behind a video screen and you see something like, you don't become afraid because you know it's just something on a video screen, but what would it be like? Difficult to imagine if you're actually up against him. Such a person. Horrible. When Kalanemi began to attack with his giant legs, all who were assembled there were reminded of Vamanadev, who measured the three worlds with how many steps? Two. He's called Trivikram. He had three steps. But with two steps he covered the world, and the biggest one of all was standing over the head of Bali. Although it was small in size, that third step, but very big because he conquered the heart of his devotee, which is more than conquering all the worlds. And that's the difference between a demon like Kalanemi and the devotees. The demons like Kalanemi, they think the biggest thing is to conquer the world, and the devotees think that we just want to surrender to Krishna. And the Lord becomes very pleased by that. He's more interested in winning the hearts of his devotees than killing the demons, which he also does. So, back to describing Kalanemi, frightening all the demigods by his mere presence. When the demon took his first step, the pressure of the air generated a whirlwind that rose into the sky. As soon as the demon, Maya, he's famous, he comes up again and again and again. As soon as he saw Kalanemi, he went and embraced him. Together, Maya and Kalanemi appeared just like Vishnu and Indra. In other words, they were a powerful combination. Upon seeing Kalanemi, who was as formidable as death, approaching them, the demigods, headed by Indra, became extremely frightened. Continuing the description, as clouds begin to gather at the end of summer, so the demon Kalanemi began to expand himself to enliven his demoniac soldiers. As soon as the demon saw his gigantic form spreading throughout the three worlds, they felt rejuvenated as if they had received nectar. Because they were all defeated in the fight and injured, but just seeing Kalanemi, they became enlivened. All the formidable demons headed by Maya and Tara became free from all fear just by seeing the arrival of Kalanemi. They rose up with great enthusiasm, determined to achieve victory in that great battle. Simply by the sight of Kalanemi, the demons felt great in getting ready for the upcoming combat. They began to run around, showing their weapons and exercising their weapons. All of the commanders appointed by Maya forgot their fear and stood up heroically, ready to combat the enemies. Yeah, they'd been totally disheartened and defeated, but now they felt again very happy and ready to fight being so much encouraged by Kala Nemi. So now some of the names of the demons are given: Maya, Tara, Varaha. You know, Varaha is the name of Krishna, but there's a demon also. There's another, Higher Griever, is also a name of one avatar of Vishnu, but he's also the name of a demon. So Maya, Tara, Varaha, Higher Griever, who's mentioned particularly as being very powerful, Shvita, who is this the son of Viprachiti, Kara, Lamba, Arishta, who is the son of Bali, Kisha, Ustra, and Svarbhanu. So these are various demons who came and joined Kala Nemi. All of these demons were as powerful as the demigods, and their particular specialty in fighting was that they're expert in fighting in deceitful, cheating ways. That's their specialty, because they're demons. And they are very skilled in the art of sending forth weapons. So, some of their weapons are described. They were equipped with powerful weapons, and they came forward very happily to fight under the tutelage of Kala Nemi. So they felt very happy with their weapons, and they're feeling very strong with their powerful hands and their big broad shoulders. And the names of, or description of some of their weapons: big heavy clubs, discs, axes, stone slabs as large as mountain peaks, pieces of stone broken by the force of thunderbolts, swords, slings, cannons that could eliminate thousands of enemies, wooden pestles, iron ores, not O-R-E, iron ore, but iron O-A-R, ores, just like for rowing a boat, various kinds of machinery, sharp tridents, nooses, poisonous snakes, arrows, thunderbolts, crowbars, and shining spears. With these weapons in their hands, the demons stood bravely ready to fight. All of the demons and their weapons shone brightly, just like the lightning that appears during a dark, cloudy night in the rainy season, when there is an occasional flash of lightning amid the twinkling of stars. So in other words, they appeared very brilliantly. If there's a very dark night with clouds and there's a flash of lightning, that appears very brilliant. So the demons who are ready to fight appeared like that, and very frightening also. Lightning can be very frightening also. So the demigods, they were no pushovers either. They're under the command of Indra. They appeared very formidable, being enlivened by the presence of the sun and the moon. Literally, the sun and the moon, and demigods also. And being rejuvenated by the heating and cooling effects of the sun and the moon, the army of demigods, they also appeared like worthy opponents. It appeared as if the stars were the flag of the demigod army. Clouds seemed to be its dress, and the planets were its sweet smile. The army of the demigods was well guarded by Yama, Indra, Kuvera, and Varuna, as well as by the great heroes Agni and Vayu. And ultimately, and most importantly, the army of demigods was under the shelter of Lord Narayana. It looked like a deep and swelling ocean. Powerful ocean. Being equipped with a variety of weapons, the demigods appeared very formidable. Yakshas and Gandharvas added to the beauty of this army. So the army is described as being beautiful. Those who like fights, they'll see the army as beautiful. Just as at the time of annihilation, earth and heaven collide, so a fierce battle took place between the demigods and demons. That's a common theme, isn't it, in in literature and drama, two armies coming together. They're rushing at each other, and then they meet and they merge, and people start falling down dead. Many such descriptions in Shastra. The battle between the demigods and the demons turned out to be a fierce and memorable one. Memorable, yeah, it's still being remembered. It's recorded here in Shastra. On the one hand, there was much nobility. In nobility, in fighting, in some cases they would, one soldier would have another enemy, he'd have an enemy at his mercy and he'd let him go. And sometimes, in some cases, there was great cruelty. So he wouldn't let anyone go. They'd kill them mercilessly. So it appeared to be a battle between pride on one hand and humility on the other. The powerful leaders of both sides advanced to challenge one another, just as clouds sometimes come from both the eastern and western oceans to dash against each other. As the armies of the demigods and the demons marched toward each other, they appeared like herds of elephants emerging from a mountain forest full of flowers. The soldiers on both sides repeatedly blew their conch shells and beat their kettle drums. The tumultuous sounds of these instruments filled the sky in all directions. The demigods and demons attacked each other with great force, so that soon many warriors fell to the ground. Some, while fighting hand to hand, became frenzied and started breaking the arms of their enemies. So this fight was all going on. It appeared that the demons had been defeated, but by Kala Nemi turning up, he gave new life to the demons, and again a heavy battle took place. When the demigods resorted to their best weapons, such as the thunderbolt and powerful weapons made of hardened iron, the demons followed suit, picking up their best swords and heavy clubs. Innumerable limbs were smashed to pulp and cut to pieces by the powerful blows of clubs and onslaught of arrows. Some of the wounded soldiers forcefully fell to the ground after being injured, while others remained hanging upside down from their broken chariots. You can imagine that. The chariot is half broken, and it's... Say the wheel of a chariot is broken, then the chariot itself will be at an angle and unusable, and the soldier is hanging out. There'll be a parapet, and the dead soldier is with his body just slumped over and hanging down over. So this is the scene being described, the gory scene. Thereafter, the demigod and demon soldiers continued to challenge each other in great anger while sitting on their chariots that were drawn by fast horses or else coursing through the sky. Although many of the warriors bravely traversed the battlefield, either on chariots or on foot, some ran away due to fear of their enemies. The tumultuous noise made by the charging chariot sounded like the rumbling noise created in the sky when clouds forcefully dash against one another. Many chariots were smashed to pieces so that the battlefield became littered, while some chariots could not be moved due to the congestion. That's a problem. In a battle, when some chariots get smashed, and then with chariots smashed and bodies of dead soldiers and elephants scattered, then it becomes very difficult to move around and to fight. Proud soldiers pushed their adversaries with their powerful arms as they marched on. When the demon and demigod soldiers attacked one another, a terrible sound was created by the movement of their ornaments. Many soldiers, whose bodies were pierced by sharp weapons, vomited blood, so that they appeared like dark clouds showering during the rainy season. The entire battlefield became covered with spent weapons and ammunition. It was littered with clubs that had been thrown in all directions. The entire scene inspired fear in the hearts of the observers because of the great enmity displayed by both sides. Yeah, they really didn't like each other. That's a fact. This was a battle of life and death. Yeah. The demigods appeared like a host of dark clouds, and their weapons shone brightly like lightning. The shooting of arrows by the soldiers of both armies appeared like the showering of rain. As the battle raged, the fearful demon Kalanemi, whose rage was directed toward the demigods, manifested a gigantic form that resembled a large cloud emerging from the ocean. So there's been a general description of the demons and their fighting with the demigods. And now enter Kalanemi. His head was decorated with valuable ornaments. His body was so large that when the clouds dashed against it, they scattered. In anger, Kalanemi was breathing very heavily, and drops of perspiration fell from his forehead. When he opened his mouth, flames issued. His arms stretched upwards into the sky, covering all directions. He appeared just like a huge black serpent with five heads and glittering tongues. Just as tall mountains cover much of the sky, the arrows released by him blocked the rays of the sun. He was standing heroically in front of his enemies as his garments fluttered in the breeze. At that time, he looked like a shining Mount Sumeru, with its peak reflecting the rays of the evening sun. By first forcefully hurling boulders and large trees at the demigods, Kalanemi caused many demigods to fall to the ground, just as Indra cuts off the wings of large mountains with his thunderbolt, making them crash to the earth. Some of the demigods were injured so badly by Kalanemi that they lost all power to move. By the flick of his powerful wrist and by the attack of his sharp trident, the demigods' heads and chests were severely injured. Many yakshas, gandharvas, and gigantic serpents lost their lives simply by being hit by the demon's powerful fists, while many others fell unconscious to the ground, their bodies bleeding profusely. So he had all kinds. He was throwing mountains and trees and punching. He's really giving the demigods a hard time. In that fierce battle, Kalanemi frightened the demigods so badly that they lost all power of discrimination. They became bewildered, and they couldn't regain their composure. They were just completely confused. Then Kalanemi, he arrested Indra by a network of arrows. What happened? Kalanemi shot so many arrows that Indra got completely surrounded by, it became like a whole cage. He was caught in a cage of arrows, even while he was sitting on the back of his elephant carrier, Airavata. So Kalanemi wasn't just some big thug who was gross and heavy and strong, punching people out, but he's also very skillful, we can understand, in the use of weapons. So Indra's the king of the demigods, and another major demigod in the fight was Varuna, but Kalanemi, Varuna has his weapon, his main weapon is his noose, his rope weapon. But Kalanemi forcefully snatched that away from Varuna. And Varuna just became completely discouraged, and he didn't feel any more enthusiasm to fight. He looked completely disappointed. He lost his bodily luster, so he looked like a cloud without rain. Then Kuvera, the next one, Kalanemi is single-handedly defeating all the leaders of the demigods. He was hit so badly by Kalanemi, who was Kala Rupi. He was like Kala Rupi B. He was like this Kalanemi was like multiple forms of death. So when Kuvera was struck so badly by the weapons of Kalanemi, he began to lament very bitterly, and he thought he should resign as being the treasure of the demigods. It's just, he felt so disconsolate and humiliated. Even Yamaraj, the punisher of everyone, became unconscious due to the attack of Kalanemi. After some time he recovered and he just ran away to the south, where he, back to his home, he ran off. In this way, the powerful demon, Kalanemi, he deprived the demigods of their duties and personally took charge of the management of universal affairs. He accomplished this feat by expanding his body throughout the four directions. He traversed the path of Rahu and reached the kingdom of the moon god. He took away all of Chandra's wealth, plundered Chandra's wealth, and seized his vast kingdom. So you can see this Kalanemi, quite a character. By his extraordinary prowess, the demon Kalanemi removed the sun god from his orbit, taking away his responsibility of creating days and nights. When Kalanemi saw Agni situated within the mouths of the demigods, Agni is within the mouths of the demigods, he forcefully took him and placed him within his own mouth. He also defeated Vayu and made him his servant. Kalanemi took control of all the oceans and rivers so that they appeared to become parts of his gigantic body. Indeed, all the water on the earth as well as the entire sky came under the control of Kalanemi. In this way, he established his supremacy within the three worlds. So clearly, he's not just any ordinary demon, this Kalanemi. He's one of the worst demons in existence in history. Thus, the terrible demon became the master of the five gross material elements and began to act like Brahma, who is the creator of all the planets. In this battle, Kalanemi seemed to be unconquerable. The sun god, moon god, as well as the controllers of all the other planets started working under his direction. So the demigods came to fight with him, but ultimately they became subdued by him. And even the very powerful Agni and Vayu simply acted as parts of his body. He appeared to be like the universal form. He established himself even as Lord Brahma in Brahmaloka, which is the chief of all planets. In this way, all the other demons began to glorify Kalanemi in the manner that the demigods were accustomed to glorify Brahma. So it's a universal catastrophe. Kalanemi just takes over the whole universe by defeating the demigods in battle. But, because Kalanemi went against all the injunctions of Shastra, he thought, I'm so powerful, I don't have to follow them. I don't have to follow the Shastra. Then he became devoid of proper knowledge, understanding of religious principles, forgiveness, and he became devoid of Lakshmi, because she resides under the shelter of Lord Narayana, and she didn't want to favor Kalanemi. So, gradually becoming deprived of all good fortune and auspiciousness, if Sri Lakshmi does not favor one, then one, she is the very form of all good fortune and all auspiciousness. So Kalanemi, becoming deprived of that, became very angry. So what did he do? He thought, Lakshmi, she's not favoring me. She's under Narayan. Okay, I'm going to go and attack Narayan. So he approached Narayan with the idea to take over the position of Narayan and to take over Vaikuntha. So, yeah, you're laughing, but the demons think they can do that. Kalanemi found Lord Narayana. He came across him with his club, conch, disc, and not mentioned here, but lotus also. he was sitting on the bank of Garuda. The Lord Narayan was holding and whirling his club called Komodaki, which is meant for destroying the demons. So a description of Lord Narayana. The color of his transcendental body was dark like a cloud, and his glittering yellow silk garments appeared like lightning. The carrier of Lord Vishnu, who was Garuda, the son of Kashyapa, possessed two beautiful wings that resembled the color of gold, and he wore a small crown upon his head. Didn't want to wear a big crown in the presence of his Lord Vishnu. Upon seeing the Supreme Lord Narayana, who is always peaceful, never agitated, seeing Narayana, who was stationed above the battlefield on Garuda, ready to annihilate the demons, Kalanemi's mind became filled with anger and envy as he spoke the following words. Ha, ha, ha. Here is our old enemy, the slayer of Madhu and Kaitaba. At the very beginning of the manifestation of the cosmos, Narayana killed the demons Madhu and Kaitaba. So here he is, the one who lives on the ocean dweller, on an island in the ocean. Vishnu, you are the personified fire. This is Kalanemi speaking to Vishnu. That was impossible for us to extinguish. In countless battles, you killed many of our predecessors, our ancestors. Kalanemi says to Vishnu, you are most cruel and merciless. After picking up a weapon on the battlefield, you act in a childish and most shameless manner. It is you who removed the simanta. Here is who removed this kumkum from the foreheads of the wives of the demons. In other words, the demons and their wives, they also follow the same culture, Vedic culture, that as long as they're married, they keep their hair parted with a parting, and in the center, and the hair tied at the back, and in the parting, they put this kumkum, this red powder. But when their husband dies, then they no longer wear that. The appearance of a widow is quite different to that of a woman whose husband is living. So Kalanemi says that it is you, you rascal, he's addressing Narayana, you made the wives of the demons remove their kumkum from their heads. In other words, he made them into widows. You are the Vishnu who is always partial to the demigods. This is an insult, because Krishna is impartial. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvesho stina priyaha. Krishna says, I'm impartial. I don't favor anyone. I don't disfavor anyone. I'm equal to all. This is a great topic, that he appears to be partial to the demigods. That topic is discussed at length in the beginning of the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, that he's not partial. Just like the criminals may say to a judge, oh, it's always you who are sending everyone to prison. You hate us. He doesn't hate us, but if you act in a bad way, you get punishment. That's all. It's the law. So, Kalanemi, heaping insults on Vishnu, continues, for the inhabitants of the heavenly planets, you are the supreme shelter. You are Ananta, the serpent, who is the master of the self-born Brahma. You are the protector of the demigods. You are always engaged in activities that are meant for our harm, the demons. It was because of your anger that Hiranyakashipu, the king of the demons, was killed. Simply because they are under your protection, the demigods sit in the front row of sacrificial performances and enjoy their three kinds of sacrificial offerings made by the great sages, of which the demons are very envious. They say, the demigods get all these facilities, why don't we? Again, it's like the criminals saying, see, all these people, they're allowed to move freely, why not us? Why are we in prison? What a nonsense government. Well, they're in prison for a reason, because they're rascals. That's why. You are the only cause of the annihilation of the demons, who are the permanent enemies of the demigods. Many of our forefathers have been vanquished by your prowess on the battlefield. Yet it's the same Vishnu who killed so many on the battlefield. You are the famous Vishnu who is ready to sacrifice his own life in battle for the sake of the demigods. That's what the demons think. They don't know, they don't recognize that Vishnu can never be killed. You release your powerful disc to kill your weapon. So in one way, he's praising him also. He recognizes, he respects him. Kalanemi respects Vishnu. He respects him as a formidable enemy. Doesn't mean he likes him, but he respects him. You are certainly death personified for the demons, but today I'm standing before you as your impending death. All the demons, they come before Vishnu and say, now I'm going to kill you. And they get killed themselves. And then another demon comes and says, you kill that demon, but you're not going to kill me, I'm going to kill you. And he goes on like that. And Kalanemi himself said, you kill so many demons, you kill this demon, you kill that demon, but I'm going to kill you. And they all say it, one after the other. They're all such fools. Today I will make sure that a wicked person like you receives the just results of his previous misdeeds. Again, the criminals, they say to the judge, you see, you're such a bad person. You made us go to prison. Now we're going to punish you. They have an upside-down idea of justice. It is due to good fortune that you have come in front of me at this time to... Today you will be pierced by my arrows and thus fall to the ground, offering your obeisances to me. Yeah, that's one way to make, if people don't like to make obeisances to Vishnu, then they have to fall down on the ground dead, and in that way they make obeisance. So better to do so voluntarily. But here, Kalanemi is saying that Narayan will pay obeisance to him. He goes on, today I will kill this Narayan. It's all crazy talk. But to Kalanemi it seemed possible because he'd already subdued all the leading demigods. He didn't realize that Vishnu is so much greater than all the demigods combined. Today I will kill this Narayana who causes fear in the minds of the demons. After accomplishing this, I will destroy all of the demigods who are under his shelter. Only then will I be relieved of the debt to my forefathers. I will consider this an act of great piety. Again, it's back to front. We were just read the other night, Adharmam dharmam iti ya. Manyase tamasa vritā. Those who are covered by the mode of ignorance, they think that adharma, non-religion is religion, and vice versa. They're so foolish. This Narayana has tortured the demons in each of his previous births. Although he is unlimited, he appears in a human form. In his incarnation as Padmanabha, he killed the two demon brothers, Madhu and Kaitab, after placing them on his thigh. Long ago, he assumed a form that was half man and half lion and killed my father, Hiranyakashipu, without any assistance. The goddess Aditi, the mother of the demigods, bore him within her auspicious womb. In this way, the Lord appeared as Vamana and visited the sacrificial arena of Bali. At that time, he took away everything from Bali by covering the three worlds with his three steps. Now, taking advantage of this battle between the demigods and the demons, he has once again descended. This time, however, I will annihilate him along with all the demigods. So it's the same. Hiranyaksha said, yeah, you kill someone, but this time I'm going to kill you. Then Hiranyakashipu said, yeah, you killed so many demons in the past, but this time I'm going to kill you. And now Kalanemi says, yeah, you killed so many demons in the past, but this time I'm going to kill you. They never give up hope. Foolish. After speaking these worthless words, thus teasing Lord Narayana, Kalanemi made up his mind to begin fighting with the Lord. Even after Kalanemi, the king of the demons, had spoken harshly to the Lord, he did not exhibit any anger. The Lord did not exhibit any anger because he is fully endowed with the quality of tolerance. Narayana simply smiled and said, ah, oh demon, you have a poor fund of strength and pride. Due to anger, you are speaking like a madman. But you have now surpassed the boundary of my forgiveness and tolerance by indulging in useless talks. For this reason, you will be defeated because of your own faults. Narayana said, I'm not going to kill you. You're killed by yourself, by your own faults. According to my estimation, you are a most wretched person. Shame on your word jugglery. People speak like this only when there is no man around or in the association of women. No one would dare to speak like this in the presence of a true hero. Oh demon, I can clearly see that you will attain the same fate as your predecessors. Who can remain in a peaceful condition of life after violating the laws laid down by the great Prajapatis, the progenitors? So he's making the point, you're a demon, so you can't live happily. It's for all your big words. You are a demon and yet you are pretending to be one of the demigods. You have unlawfully snatched away their rightful property. Yeah, he's a demon, but he's taken over the function of the demigods. He has no right to do that. Therefore today, Narayana says, I will destroy you without fail and reinstate the demigods in their rightful positions. When Lord Narayana had said this, Kalanemi's response was simply to laugh in disdain. Ah, ha, ha. Without wasting more time, he picked up his weapons with each of his 100 hands and discharged them forcefully on the chest of Lord Vishnu, and Kalanemi's eyes were red and blazing with anger. In the meantime, the demons Maya and Tara, upon seeing that Lord Vishnu had entered the battlefield, charged at him with a variety of weapons in their hands. So Maya and Tara and Kalanemi are all attacking. These are three big demons. They're all attacking at one time. But despite being attacked from all sides by the powerful demons who were showering their weapons, Lord Hari remained unmoved like a mountain. Then after some time, the demon Kalanemi turned his attention to fighting with Garuda, because when Narayana goes to battle with Garuda, Garuda also gets into the action and starts clawing with his talons and beating with his wings. So Kalanemi picked up a giant club with one of his 100 hands, and intensely concentrating, he appeared very formidable. Carefully aiming, he threw that huge club at Garuda with great force and anger, so severely that he even surprised Lord Vishnu. The huge club hit Garuda's head, and even Garuda became dazed and fell down upon the earth. He remained standing, but his entire body was shaking, trembling with pain. So to be able to do anything to Garuda, you have to be really a very, very powerful demon, because Garuda himself is so powerful. Lord Vishnu, seeing that Garuda was injured by the blow of the demon's club and that his own body was also injured with many injuries, he became as angry as fire, and his eyes became fully angry as he invoked his infallible chakra disc weapon. The Supreme Lord moved as swiftly as Garuda, without Garuda, and his four powerful arms expanded until they covered the four directions. And thus it was seen how Vishnu, whose name means that he's all-powerful, was thus practically experienced how he is Vishnu means all-pervading. So it was seen how he was all-pervading throughout time and space. He expanded his form in such a way that it appeared as if he were preparing to destroy the entire three worlds. The great sages and Gandharvas began to very respectfully offer prayers to him. Madhusudana, the name is given here, Madhusudana, who previously killed the demons. Madhu and also Kaitava. Madhusudana, who expanded his form to cover outer space just to ensure victory for the demigods. So the demigods, seeing this, they might have been afraid that this Kala Nemi, he's injured Garuda so badly, unprecedentedly, and even Vishnu appears to be injured. So Vishnu, just to reassure the demons, the demigods, Vishnu expanded his form throughout the universe. The crown on the Lord's head touched the ground in heaven, leaving a mark. His fluttering garments pervaded the entire sky along with the clouds. While manifesting this gigantic form, the Lord was still seen to stand upon the earth. Lord Vishnu then invoked his celebrated weapon, the Sudarshan Chakra. Then there's a long description of the Sudarshan Chakra, which I'm going to read again just toward the end of Vishnu Sahasranam, Krishna willing. I'll get through the next 350 names or so. And towards the end, there's the names come up like Chakri, who holds the Sudarshan Chakra. But I'll read it here again also. Why not? The Sudarshan Chakra, the description of the Sudarshan Chakra, which Lord Vishnu is now putting up his Sudarshan Chakra. As long as he's not calling up his Sudarshan Chakra, he may be just playing around like a cat plays with a mouse. But when the Sudarshan Chakra comes up, means it's all over, folks. No one escapes Sudarshan Chakra. It's described here. The Sudarshan Chakra illuminates the surrounding area just like the sun. It has 1,000 spokes. It is capable of destroying all enemies. It is brilliant, like blazing fire. It is both frightening and yet beautiful. And the beautiful, therefore, is called Sudarshan, very beautiful to see, which has edges made of gold, whose navel, the hub, is as hard as a thunderbolt, which creates fear in the minds of the demons, which is nourished. What nourishment will the Sudarshan Chakra get? He's also a person, right? He's standing right there on the altar along with Jagannath. So he's nourished by the blood, bones, and marrow of the demons. Of course, you don't offer that here. Here he takes Jagannath's prasad. He is unexcelled in the art of punishment, he has a circle of sharp blades around him that resembles a garland of flowers. He is capable of assuming any form at will and moving about at will. He was personally created by Brahma for the purpose of curbing the demons. He is always absorbed in gratifying the anger of the great sages that are disturbed by the demons. He is always awaits an opportunity to strike. So he's sitting there on the altar serving Jagannath, but really he likes to get out in the battle and kill the demons. So the attack of whom? Sudarshan causes all moving and non-moving living entities within the three worlds to become bewildered, and he gives pleasure during battle to those who eat flesh. That means like the vultures and jackals. When they see a battle, they become very happy. They start salivating. And actually that's described in Shastra and people would have had the experience that they know the vultures, when the two armies come together, before they start biting, the vultures assemble. They can understand, now we're going to get a good lunch today. So, description of Sudarshan. And Lord Hari, who is described here as Sridhara, he keeps Lakshmi on his chest. began to manifest his great prowess, which far excels that of the demons, by cutting off Kalanemi's arms, first of all, not his head, step by step. He also, next, with his Sudarshan Chakra, he cut off the 100 heads of that demon whose loud laughing had caused a blazing fire. So he stopped laughing. He didn't have, even his heads were cut off. Even after his heads and hands were cut off by the Supreme Lord, the demon Kalanemi did not renounce his fighting spirit. His gigantic body remained stationed on the battlefield, just like a tree without branches. That's also sometimes described in histories of battles, that a soldier may have his head cut off while he's running toward the enemy, and he continues to run toward the enemy even after his head is cut off for a little time, then it falls down. So that happened with Kalanemi. So he's still, Kalanemi, even without his head, he's still flapping around and trying to fight. The body is still going on. But Garuda spread his wings and flapped them so violently that they forcefully dashed against Kalanemi and made his body fall to the ground. But even in his death, the Kalanemi, without his arms and without his heads, his body just span around and fell down and created havoc in the opposing armies. In other words, even by falling down, his body was so big that he killed some of the enemies, the demigods. So Kalanemi is dead on the ground, and the sages and demigods are calling out, "Sadhu, sadhu." Very good, very good. And they came up to Lord Vishnu and offered prayers to glorify his heroic deed. However, Lord Vishnu wasn't just sitting around and accepting worship. Next, he went out to get all the other demons and get them under control so that they didn't cause any more disturbance on the battlefield. He pulled the demons by their hair, violently twisted their necks, tore open their mouths, and broke their backs. This is God. Don't get on the wrong side of God. In this way, the demons lost their lives, being burned by the heat of the Lord's club and disc. Their broken limbs flew into the sky before finally settling to the earth. In other words, by the club and disc of Narayana, the limbs were broken off and they flew up into the sky and then fell down to the earth. After thus gratifying Indra by killing all of the demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who carries a club in his hand, stood silently upon the battlefield, being greatly satisfied in himself. Hare Krishna. This is Kalanemi Niha, as described in Sri Harivansha Purana. So it's not all dancing with the gopis. There are other pastimes also. Hare Krishna. What's this? Ksira? Oh, yeah. Very opulent. All right. Can take prasad after that. You're not feeling vomiting after hearing all those descriptions. Quite a horrible description, is it not? That's one of the bhakti rasas. That's bibhatsa. Terrible, terrible feeling, terrible emotion. That's also there in God Himself. Hare Krishna. Kalanemi Neha. Kijai. Hare Krishna. All right. Should end sweetly. What is that? Madhurena Samapayat. End sweetly. So there's some sweet prasadam to distribute after that bloody account. Hare Krishna.